Exodus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Hello, this is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and you're listening to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. We welcome you today, and we always take just a moment to let you know that this is a ministry of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church, and if you are in the listening area, which is just outside of Boone, North Carolina, 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road off of Highway 105 South, that is just above the Willow Creek Golf Course. We'd love for you to come by and visit with us. Maybe you're visiting in the high country, maybe you are in the area and looking for a church home. We have Sunday school for all ages on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. and then our Sunday morning worship service is at 11 a.m. Every Wednesday night at 7, we have our midweek prayer and Bible study. Second and fourth Sunday nights at 6, we have our Sunday evening services. And so plenty of opportunities to come out, and we'd love to see you there. You would be more than welcome. I do have a real quick announcement. This is coming up quickly, November the 10th through the 12th, revival services, and that is a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. That is at the Faith Baptist Church in Damascus, Virginia. And it's right on the main street. I don't know the name of that street, but if you've ever been to Damascus, I think there's only one main street. And if you go right through Damascus from the Tennessee side, and you make the big curve there where the caboose is, just beyond that down there and on the left is the Faith Baptist Church. And Brother Terry Compton, Preacher Terry Compton, he's been over there for the past few months, helping them out, filling in, and getting started there. And we thank the Lord for Brother Terry and the invitation to come over and be with the good folks at the Faith Baptist Church. Services will start nightly at 7 p.m. So if you are in the area, and I believe they're having a big Memorial Day observation, celebration there, not Memorial Day, Veterans Day, on that weekend. So there's a lot going on in town. We'd love for you to come by and be with us in the revival services. That's November 10th through the 12th, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night at the Faith Baptist Church in Damascus, Virginia. And so I wanted to mention that. And I missed Noah last week. He was under the weather and not able to be here, but he's back today, and it's good to see him. And how are you today?
Doing well. I'm glad to be here this morning, as always. Glad to be back. We do want to say welcome to all those who are listening in right here on AM 1450, WATA, and 96.5 out of Boone, North Carolina. Those who listen in on AM 690, WZAP, out of Bristol, Virginia. And those who listen in on KPGT 89.1 FM, The Truth, out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate all of our listeners. And we've been studying now for several weeks, well, more than several. This is number 14. On the subject of civics, and the Bible has a great deal to teach us about civics, and the definition of what civics is the rights and duties of citizens and how the government works. And we've looked at a lot of different things. We've looked at rights, we've looked at the Declaration of Independence, we've went all the way back into the Bible and took, for example, the Apostle Paul, and how that he used his knowledge of government to defend himself and to protect his liberties as a Roman citizen. He did that more than once. We looked in the Old Testament. We saw that really if you read the Old Testament law, that has to do with civics, the rights and duties of citizens and how the government works. Well, they were under a theocracy, and so they were to obey the law of God. God would speak to Moses. Moses would speak to the people, and God just explained to them how that was supposed to work. And so that's a knowledge of civics. And so we find examples in the Bible. We find examples in history. 2 weeks ago, I mentioned the example of how the early Baptist people, not exclusively just the Baptists, but they were definitely the leaders in the movement for religious liberty. And they used their knowledge of civics, they used wisdom, they used biblical principles in order to bring about the establishment of the First Amendment. And the First Amendment is very central to our American way of life, and also a way of freedom, liberty, having freedom. And I just want to see if I can find, I had it right here in front of me, and I closed my little book, but I wanted to share with you the First Amendment. There are actually five sections to the First Amendment. And the first one says this: Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging freedom of speech, abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And Christian people were behind the original Bill of Rights, but it's interesting that the first one has to do with freedom of religion, freedom of speech, that the government would not prohibit the exercise of religion. It's hard for us to imagine, but from the early 1600s in this country up until the late 1700s, even the beginning of the 1800s, in America, there was religious persecution. You know, the pilgrims came seeking religious freedom. The Puritans came right on their heels for the same reason, seeking religious freedom. But the Puritans, although seeking religious freedom, were not willing to allow others to have religious freedom. So the first thing they did, they set up a church-state government, and they made the church and the court the same thing, and they began to enforce what is called the First Table. The First Table is the first part of the Ten Commandments that has to do with man's relationship to the Lord. And so they begin to try to enforce what they called the First Table. And there was religious persecution in America. For example, in 1651 in Boston, Massachusetts, a man named Mr. Obadiah Holmes, he was put in jail. He was whipped unmercifully with 30 lashes. The maximum was 40, and that was considered a death sentence. 30 lashes with a whip was the same punishment of people that were guilty of adultery, rape, and counterfeiting. Those that witnessed the whipping of Obadiah Holmes said that the man that was doing it was trying actually to kill him, and that three times while he was whipping Mr. Holmes, that he would stop and spit in his hands and rub his hands together to get a better grip on the whip that he was using. The crowd was so astonished by what was taking place, troubled actually by what was taking place, that they cried out for the punishment to stop. And there were 13 arrest warrants issued for those that cried out for him to stop killing this man. And that's what they were doing, was trying to kill Mr. Obadiah Holmes. And so they arrested people for trying to intervene. They fined some, put others in jail, threatened others to be whipped as well. And eventually all the fines were paid, and nobody else was whipped because of that. But let me tell you what he was guilty of. He was guilty, and here was the charge, for being at a private meeting at Lynn, that was a little township, upon the Lord's Day. And Mr. Obadiah Holmes and John Clark and another gentleman had gone to an elderly man's home who had written a letter to their church and said, I'm old and feeble, and I'm no longer able to travel, and I would love some company from the Lord's people. And so he wrote a letter to the Baptist church, and John Clark was the pastor. And so they made the little trip across the river into Massachusetts. That put them in under the jurisdiction of the Puritans, and they heard about it, and they came to the house where they were having a private meeting, and they arrested them, put them in jail, and whipped Obadiah Holmes almost to death. And that's in America. That was religious persecution. You go forward over 100 years in America, especially in the colony of Virginia. Virginia was very hard upon the Baptist preachers there for a great many years. In 1768 in Fredericksburg, Virginia, there were five Baptist preachers who were put in jail for a year and a day. And the reason they were put in jail is because they would not stop preaching. They would not promise to stop preaching in the county. In Culpeper County, Virginia, a Baptist preacher named James Ireland was put in prison for 5 months. And while he was in prison, they tried to kill him three different ways. Three attempts were made upon his life. One was with a gunpowder explosion. Another, they tried to suffocate him to death by lighting fires and it going into his jail cell. And then another tried to poison him. James Ireland was so popular among the people that they would come to the jail where he was and they would wave a white flag and let him know that the congregation was outside, and he would preach through the bars of the prison, shout through the bars. He couldn't see the people, but he knew they were out there. And so he would preach to his congregation from within the prison. While the congregation was gathered there, people would ride through on horses. They threw urine in James Ireland's face. And there's many, many examples. One preacher was arrested. They told him not to preach in that county anymore. So he went out to the edge of the county line. He got a table, and he set the table, two legs in one county and two in the other county, got up on the table and began to preach, and the magistrates came and yanked him down off the table and hauled him off to prison. And over and hundreds and hundreds of people. Patrick Henry was not a Baptist. He was a good Christian gentleman, a definite friend of liberty, and he came to defend many times Baptist preachers. And I've talked about Patrick Henry here on the radio broadcast before, but he came into court one time, and I believe that time it was three Baptist preachers, and they were on trial. And Patrick Henry came in, and he had a good loud voice, and he picked up the charge, and he walked around the room, and he waved it above his head, and he made a big, long speech about this day in which religious liberty is breaking forth from the bosom of every man and great strides being made. And he went on, and he said, "And what are these men charged for? For preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ." And it so took the judge back and the people that were involved in the trial there that they just let him go and they just dismissed. What a charge for preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, these Baptist people, and also the Quakers were affected as well, would probably be the next largest group, and they were persecuted in America. Rough times for them. What did they do? What course of action did they take? They were being mistreated. They were being unjustly singled out. They were being attacked in their homes, in private meetings. Laws were being passed against them. They were being demeaned, demoralized, imprisoned, fined, beaten, and even instances in America of being put to death. What did they do? What did these Baptist people do? And you have to realize there was a great revival during the mid-1700s. And so this is not just a little fringe group, but by the end of the American Revolutionary War, there were more Baptists in Virginia than any other denomination, than all the other denominations put together. And the old-line churches were dying, and people were getting saved, and they were becoming Baptists. And so you had this revival going on at the same time as the American Revolution and the Declaration of Independence and all of these things. What did these people do? Now, here's a good lesson from history for those that want to change the way things are in society. What they did not do: they did not turn to violence. They did not burn their towns down. They did not begin to destroy. They did not begin to attack the authorities, the magistrates. They did not turn to anarchy. And they didn't turn to vengeance. You know, they didn't say, "Boy, they done this to me, I'm going to do this to them." They didn't turn to any of those things. But in our day, look where our society is going. I've heard already, and there's been articles and this is just a sad state that our country's in, but I've heard people talk about, if Trump wins, we're going to burn the country down. We're going to tear the towns up. We're going to run through the streets. We're going to vandalize. We're going to do all of these things. Really? Is that the way to change things? But that's the way our society is going. These who were truly being oppressed, who were truly being attacked and singled out, they did not turn to those things. Let me tell you why they were successful in what they ventured to do. They did not use a worldly example. They did not go after the example of the French Revolution. They didn't go after the examples of the Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. And I'm afraid a great many of our politicians have been educated in the art of disruption. They don't know how to build up, but they sure know how to tear down. They know how to divide people. They know how to pit people against themselves. This is not the example that our Baptist forefathers used. And here's what they did. Let me read to you some verses from the Bible. Romans chapter 12, verse 14. Bless them which persecute you. Bless and curse not, is what the Bible said. And we look on down. I want to begin reading in verse number 17. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath, for it is written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. And if you could sum up what they did, you could sum it up in verse number 21. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. And that was their mode of operation. That's what they did. That's how they conducted themselves. As late as 1801, people were concerned, especially Baptist people, they were concerned about the state of their religious freedoms. Now, there's a historical example I'm going to share with you. The Danbury Association of Baptists. This is from the state of Connecticut. And Thomas Jefferson had just been elected the second president of the United States. And these Baptists got together, and three of these men came together. They appointed three men to write a letter to Mr. Jefferson concerning their concerns over their religious liberty. You see, at that time, in 1801, now most people have no idea, even after the American Revolution, after the Declaration of Independence, after the Constitution, and after the enactment of the Bill of Rights, which ensured Congress shall make no law. That was concerning the federal government. But even after that, the individual states had to decide what they were going to do. That the Bill of Rights applied to the federal government. It did not apply to the states. So each state was still free, if they so chose, to enact a state government. Now, all the states line up with the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment. But then they did not. And so these Baptists in Connecticut were still concerned that the government, the state government in Connecticut, through the Congregational Church, would establish a state church. And they were still having to go to them for certain privileges, marriage licenses, permission to preach, things along these lines. So they wrote to Thomas Jefferson, and it's a flowery introduction. I'm not going to read all of that, but a lot of these, what I would call ancient letters, they start out with a long, flowery introduction. And that's how they started their letter out. But then they get down to business. And I'm amazed at their, I shouldn't be amazed, but I'm impressed. That's a good word. I'm impressed with their knowledge of civics and how the government works. And I'll point out a few things. I'm just going to read. They said this. They said, our sentiments, and this that means what we are writing to you about, Mr. President, what we're concerned about. Our sentiments are uniformly on the side of religious liberty, that religion is at all times and places a matter between God and individuals, that no man ought to suffer in name, person, or effects on account of his religious opinions, and that the legitimate power of civil government extends no further than to punish the man who works ill to his neighbor. Now, I've said that many, many times. The purpose of government is to do two things: protect the innocent and punish the evil. And they understood that. They wrote to the president and said the legitimate power of civil government extends no further than to punish the man who works ill to his neighbor. Government is there to protect the good, punish the evil. Period. But, sir, our constitution of government is not specific. And they're talking now about their state government. He said, our ancient charter, together with the laws made coincident therewith, were adopted as the basis of our government at the time of our revolution. And such has been our laws and usages, and such still are, so that religion is considered as the first object of legislation, and therefore what religious privileges we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. So there in Connecticut, they still did not have freedom of religion as an inalienable right. He said, in these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men. They should not have to go to the government to get a license to preach, to get permission to do what churches ought to be able to do without going to the government. And so they felt at a great disadvantage, and they were. He said, it is not to be wondered at, therefore, if those who seek after power and gain under the pretense of government and religion should reproach their fellow men, or should reproach their chief magistrate as an enemy of religion, law, and good order, because he will not dares not assume the prerogative of Jehovah and make laws to govern the kingdom of Christ. They're saying it's not the place of the government to govern the kingdom of Christ. They don't have any business in the business of the church. They said, sir, we are sensible that the President of the United States is not the national legislator, and also sensible that the national government cannot destroy the laws of each state. You see, they understood some things that we don't understand in our society. They understood that the president was not the national legislator. I'm concerned about who's going to be president next week, in 10 days or so. I'm very concerned about that. But I take solace in the fact that the president is not the national legislator. And really, anything they do, they have to run through Congress. Our hope is in our Constitution and our congressmen doing their job. They realize that. They realized also that the national government cannot destroy the laws of each state, which is happening in our day and time. Many, many states have passed laws, and the government's come along and said, you can't do that. It's not the business of the government to tell the states what they can and what they cannot do. Government has overreached its bounds. They understood that. And what they were asking the president in their letter, they said, but our hopes are strong that the sentiment of our beloved president, which have had such a genial effect already, like the radiant beams of the sun, will shine and prevail through all these states. And I'm not going to read all the rest of that because I just don't have time. But what they were asking the president, they were not asking for any special thing except his favor, that he would use his influence as the president to use that it would shine as the radiant beams of the sun to influence the states towards adopting religious freedom, just like the Bill of Rights. That's what they did. They had a great understanding of how what their rights were, that they were inalienable, the place of the government. They understood these things beautifully. And their success and America's success as we know it. And I read a quote a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, and it was a historian. and they said every Protestant, when they pass a Baptist church, should tip their hat because it was the Baptist people that fought for religious freedom. And if we enjoy, you enjoy freedom to believe, and you have freedom not to believe. If we had a church state in America, you wouldn't have freedom not to believe. Your unbelief would be punished, would be punishable by law. But that we have freedom of religion or no religion, there are people that fought. So you can believe or not believe today. That's what I'm saying. But their success, I'm going to quickly give you three things. Their success, how were they successful? How did they change the whole almost 200 years of persecution to total religious freedom? I'm going to give you three things quickly, and our time will be gone for today. Number one, they had an uncompromising message. Their message never faltered. No matter what they preached about, no matter what was the topic of the day, first and foremost, their message was the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. The gospel changes lives. And so an uncompromising message with their lip, a life to back it up, and liberty for all. You see, they understood if the government makes a person believe, then it dulls the gospel sword. We all have to be allowed to choose or not choose for ourselves. And as soon as government gets involved, it defiles the gospel message. And so they preached liberty for all to believe, to not believe. Uncompromising message centered around the gospel, the saving gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ, that God sent His Son into this world, that the world through Him might be saved. Uncompromising message. Number two, their undeniable character. They didn't kill the sheriffs. They didn't burn the courthouse down. They loved God. They loved their neighbor. They loved their country. They loved their family. They were willing to stand up for what was right. They obeyed every law that they could that did not break their conscience. And what broke their conscience was the taxes towards support of a ministry and a church that they did not believe in. But they were exemplary citizens. They were the kind of people you would want them in your town. You would want them in your state. You would want them behind you. And so they had an undeniable good character. And that influenced the rest of the country. And then number three, they had an unquenchable courage. They were told not to meet, not to preach. They were threatened. They were arrested. They were imprisoned. They were beaten. They were killed. And then they would tell them not to do it, and they'd come back and they'd say, we ought to obey God rather than men. And they had courage to stand up for what was right. And their reward was revival, souls, a nation based on the principles of freedom, and blessings upon blessings upon blessings. We live in a blessed country. It just didn't appear out of thin air. But people of principle and morals and character fought for everything that we enjoy today. And my, we're about to let it all slip away. Well, we need some courageous people in this time in which we live. My hope and my prayer as we are on the eve of a national election is that God would spare us once again and not give us what we deserve, but give us mercy and allow us to continue on. Well, let's pray for our country. Noah's going to come and give the contact information. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church that's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us through our church website at 828-963-4596. That's our church phone number at 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That is mtlebanonbc.org.